Can you see me? Can you hear me? Can you feel me?
I can smell you too.
Bitch. That wasn't in the podcast feedback. It's our first video episode of Laughing and Fawning. Hello. The weird thing about this is that, like, I can't stop looking at myself.
Yeah, that's all I've been looking at.
Hi. Do I look good? Look at my ponytail. Ooh, I whip my hair back and forth. I whip my hair.
Do you like my ponytail?
Ooh, it's the Sasha Colby 0 inch. The Sasha Colby nub. Okay, just wanted to say, so we did our podcast survey, and two of the top requests that we had were advice segments, which we have not figured out, and video episodes. So, you're welcome.
It's time to kick back with Flapjack, the claptrap that rambles on. They talk shop nonstop with Form the Phenomenon. They chit-chat about this and that. If you piss them off, then you're a flop. They're flapping and fawning.
Facebook does not have my permission to print anything off of my computer. Flapjack!
I'm Purdy, I'm 30, and I want to make flurry. Fawn.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Flapping and Fawning. This is the show where we flap our gums about our lives as non-binary drag artists, fawn over our favorite drag trends, and flop the things that deserve to be flopped in this world. And we're back! It's season 3, officially. Doesn't it look good?
In HD.
HD. I don't know if my camera is that good, but it's at least 1080.
No, the HD stands for huge dick.
Fawn, we have a special guest who is a young adult novelist later on. I don't think we can say the
Maybe
D word.
Maybe bleep that one out.
Okay, so...
I did not think about that.
Well, we've been busy, not just with our HDs. since we... stopped recording, or since we took our podcast break, our last episode. Oh my god, I can't stop looking at myself. What are you wearing? Tell me about your look.
I am wearing a gorgeous denim and pink blazer that my wonderful partner got me for Christmas.
I don't think I've said, like, publicly how much I love this blazer. It's very cute.
I love Marked it so it much. I wear it a lot. And then I found these earrings when I was cleaning out my drag. I've apparently had these for years before my ears were pierced. And I think we're probably going to turn them into clip-ons, but glad they never got turned into clip-ons.
Yeah, they're really, really cute. I love it. Yeah, your whole fit. You're just very, like, trans rights today.
Yeah.
I love. I went with this purple ponytail because it's one of the only wigs I have that can work with a headset. And I definitely thought about that more than 24 hours in advance of recording this episode.
I almost wore my Barbie.
Oh wait, I wonder if I could wear my pola, my yellow pola.
Maybe
with this. I'd sweat a lot. Those polos made me sweat a little bit. But I love it. Like, it's 40 inches and it's so cute. Well, we have been busy since season 2 finished. The last episode we recorded was when Neohuru X won Dragula season 5. So what have you been up to since then, Fawn?
Well, you know, just opening for Chapel Roan.
Cash.
Getting a tattoo.
You went right for the big stuff. I was like, let's build it up first.
I also, like, recently moved, which is exciting.
Yeah, how has that been?
It's been great. Getting the drag room settled, not great. But the new house.
But you have a drag room.
I have two drag rooms.
You have two drag... Rich. Rich.
No, rent. Rent.
That is super nice, though, to not have, like, a storage unit. Because I'm dealing with that now. Like, I have a storage unit for stuff. And
the storage unit I was using, I have shit. So much shit that's fucked up now. You're not even listening. You're just looking at yourself.
Listen, everyone demanded that we have video podcasts, and this is what you get. This is your fault.
I have to put, like, a piece of paper up over a half of the screen just so Flap can't stare at herself.
Well, if I have a ponytail, I'm going to be like, oh,
I don't know why.
Stimming.
That's the flapping part of the podcast. Okay, yes.
It's but, flapping, not flipping.
Uh-huh. Oh, flipping and fawning. I like the ring of that. So maybe you should have a podcast with Maya Amon LePage.
Queen of flip.
Flipping and fawning. So yes, you have your new house. You've got your new drag rooms. I love that.
Anything? I got a bumper that's fucked up.
Oh yeah, you've been dealing with car issues.
Yeah.
Not
more
fun.
On that later.
Moron. Was there anything else that you've had happen? I ask because I'm trying to be more caring about other people before I just talk about myself.
Have I had anything else happen? I don't know. Probably. Oh, my parents met my partner.
Oh, that's big news.
Yeah.
How did that go?
Surprisingly well. Like, they've, like, met them twice now.
Sorry. Video episode is so unusual. We're just, like, not used to this at all. Like, I'm like, yeah? And? Okay, yes. But that's a huge and, step. Like, how did that go?
It went really well. And, like, they already, like, have had dinner with us twice. So.
And so they met Mark as your partner?
Yeah.
Okay, great. It's not like this is my roommate situation.
No, but there's some people in the family that I might be like that with.
Yeah. Well, baby steps, right? Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes steps in the right direction, even if there are missteps, is better than like no steps at all.
Right.
So that's good. I'm glad that that progress is being made because I know that was really huge for me when my family got to meet Danny. So good. I'm really glad to hear that. For me, I know that in our last episode, I plugged Pageant, the musical at Birmingham Festival Theater. So that has now finished. And that was like a whole nother world to me. It was otherworldly, some might say.
Whole new world.
It was can't so sing too much because of copyrights now that we're on YouTube.
I know. Oh, yeah, we're on YouTube. Well, more on that later. But so I was in Pageant and it was my first musical. And honestly, I think that is the most I've ever had people laugh at anything I've ever done, which was just this wonderful, wonderful feeling. Like,
don't people usually laugh when you put makeup on?
Yeah, I mean, I'm funny looking, but this time they laughed because I was funny looking and funny, I think. Or maybe I just got progressively more funny looking. I don't know. You saw it. You tell me.
No, it was really good. It was really good. Your character, fantastic. Both of your characters, fantastic.
Ooh, she's a Gemini. Yeah. Okay, I decided. So if you did see it, then
Is that your new drag name? I decided.
Oh, no. I decided. I like that name, though. But I have decided that if I ever get the opportunity to do a Snatch Game, I am definitely leaning into that, like, that bit of a character. Like, I had a character who went all the time and it just made everyone laugh, so we'll see. So I did that. I also got to judge the Pride on the Plains pageant, which was really amazing. Congrats to everyone who competed in that and also the winners of that pageant. I'm finding that I really love getting to be on the more like administrative side of pageants.
I thought you were about to say that you like judging people.
Oh, well, I mean, that's why I have a podcast. So obviously, so there's that. One thing that has like really taken a toll on me recently, we had like a couple of bills that were anti-LGBTQ+ legislation that had reared their ugly heads once again. You know, they were dead in session last year, but this spring they came back around and got voted on. And so there was a Pack the State House event. So I took my drag kids and we went to Montgomery for a day to witness and experience that. And they did unfortunately move forward in the Alabama session. But I just want to take a moment to just recognize that it honestly took a big toll on me because it was like, wow, I'm seeing my own existence like kind of get debated here. And that was a very strange feeling. Cause when you surround yourself with your chosen family, you kind of forget like I think it's easy to forget sometimes the real attacks that, you know, we can have on our own world.
We live in our own little bubble sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm glad I went to remind myself of that. I was very proud of everyone who spoke. One person who spoke that we know is Monarch, and they talked about non-binary individuals and what it means to be androgynous. Yeah. And I think it was really powerful. And also one other thing was that the votes it wasn't like a landslide vote. It was 6 to pass, 3 no, right? So 6 yay, 3 nay. And
that's just for it to like be up for a vote, right?
Yes, to go to the other half of Congress. And the fact that there were 3 noes and the 3 who spoke against it, like I hope that they realize how much their words meant to us in that moment, and what it meant to my drag kids in that moment to hear about themselves, their partners being debated like this in front of other folks. And so I'm glad we went. There was also some other like civil rights victories that day. So I was glad we got to witness some victories, and it wasn't all just like a huge beat down, but it was really hard to witness some of that stuff go forward. Cause it's just to us, it's so clearly wrong, but yeah. To other people, it's like a reminder of the world we're in. And speaking of which, it is an election year. So don't forget to head on over to vote.gov to vote and vote for people who support, our LGBTQ plus community.
I've got to change my voting address now.
Oh yeah, you do. Moved.
Cause I'm in a whole different area.
Hull. I also started a little bit of a health journey. So for the last 2 weeks, I've actually been, you know, going to the gym twice a week, like just really trying to take care of myself and focus on my health, because I have a lot of crazy gigs right now, but I'm like, I'm going to prioritize myself. That's a big goal for this year, is just to continue doing that. And I've lost 5 pounds. So
slay for
proud of myself. Hopefully
I can slay for healthy life choices. I need to get back in the gym because I'm just out of shape.
Yeah. You should come to yoga with
old.
Me. Are you flexible?
Old. Not anymore.
You could be.
I like told Mark that now that we have a house, I want to learn to do the splits.
A house is required to learn
have
to do
room
the splits.
To learn to do the splits.
Oh, I guess with those long legs, you need at least what, 12 feet?
Yeah.
And also, you know, you mentioned that we opened for Chapel Roan. That was huge.
Huge. Amazing.
Oh my God. I did not expect the reaction to that we got. Like, it was like the times that I've had like I don't know if I can even say that I've gone viral, because I've had like a few like 200K videos, but like it's like those moments, like I've gotten followers days later, you know. Yeah. And it's like we had a huge amount of reach, and so I loved that aspect of it, but also just like the audience.
The Iron City was at capacity, because I talked to one of the security guards, and I've been to a few shows at Iron City. Never seen it that packed. One of the security people said that they were at capacity, which is like 1,300 people. A little over 1,300 Ooh. People is capacity.
And we got to meet Chapel, which was really cool. I love that you got to share that story with her.
About, very like, personal story about like my second date with Mark. So...
yeah, that's wonderful. Well, I think that's everything about what's been going on with me. So anything else to add before we get into some big announcements?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, let's hit it. Okay.
Toots.
So this is the first episode of season 3 of Flapping and Fawning. And as you've already heard, we have a brand new jingle for Flapping and Fawning, which was actually made by Lily St. Queer, who was on Camp Wanakiki with me. But that's just a taste of what you can expect from season 3 of Flapping and Fawning. We have so, so, so much in store for you. You're only getting just the tip right now. Fawn, read the next thing.
Where were we at? My
That's okay. You were doing this. You had a busy job. That was a lot.
So make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel for our new video content. If you are listening to us right now, if you're watching us, you're probably already on our YouTube channel.
But
make sure you subscribe.
I mean, subscribe, but also it helps us out a lot if you can listen to, if you can watch us on Spotify or listen to us on any of the podcasting apps that have video episodes. We're actually going to release the ones for free on YouTube about 2 or 3 days after the other episodes are released. So if you subscribe to us on Spotify or any of those other podcast platforms, that should be the number one way that you watch Flapping and Fawning.
And if you like are on Apple, just listen to us when we drop. And then come put us on YouTube whenever, and while you're doing something, put it on in the background. You can see our gorgeous looks for the week. Because we didn't get all dressed up for nothing.
We've also already had, by the time this episode airs, we will have 3 videos that you can watch over on our YouTube page. So we will be having a lot of video content out there. So we have the full live stream from Miss Magic City Comedy Queen. That pageant is up. We also have highlights from opening for Chapel Roan. And also the very first place that you can see Fawn's tattoo that is now on their leg from losing the Dragula Titans bet is on our YouTube page as well. YouTube channel.
I would show it right now, but, you know, I'm padded, so I've got all these tights on.
Yeah, we both are very padded and corseted right now.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. From the boobs down. Now, like I said before, this is our 99th episode of Flapping and Fawning, and we're going to still be a little while until we are fully back in swing on Flapping and Fawning, but we are so excited to announce that we have a 100th episode special for you all. So in May, you can expect Flapping and Fawning Podcast 100th episode live featuring Jarvis Hammer from the Boulay Brothers Dragula season 5. Yes, this is something that's been in the works for forever. Okay, Fawn's just making whale noises at this point. We haven't even been podcasting for an hour. Do you see this? This is what you're making me deal with video episodes, folks. But it's fine. I'm doing it for you because I love Yam Festival Theater on Thursday, May 2nd. And the tickets for that are only $20 just to come to the event. But there's also a meet and greet option that would make your whole ticket package $30. $30. Or if you are not from Birmingham or if you want to watch from home, you can also enjoy that episode live for only $10 with the live stream option.
Yes.
But it will also be an official Flapping and Fawning video episode.
You don't want to miss it. It's going to be a great time. We are so excited to have Jarvis all the way here from Atlanta.
Yeah. Have you ever talked with him before?
Not like in person.
I've literally never have at all. So I'm super excited to meet him, and like the audience will get to do a Q&A. We're going to play some games. Like there's a meet and greet option. It's going to be so fun.
It's going to be such a slay night.
We're just like hanging out, having fun.
We're like off to a big start for season 3.
Oh yeah. And there's more to come. In fact, there will be even more. There will be even more announcements at our season 3 launch for with the Jarvis event. So make sure you come out to that. Now, like I always say, if you stay plugged, you don't have to
get plugged.
And that's why Fawn is going to kick off our plugs.
Now, on Friday, March 15th at 8 p.m., Drag Night at the Nick. It is going to be happening, presented by DIY Productions, hosted by Twat Weiland with cast member Green, featuring performances by Alexi, Kabbalah Divine, Lauren Liu, Pressure K Friday, and Tempest Prochella. I don't know if I'm saying these names
Tempest right. Prosciutto.
If I say your name incorrectly, please inbox me.
No. You let us know in a 5-star review.
Let us know in a 5-star review.
And we will
you
read
can
it right here.
Me out if you want to. I apologize. You can give me the proper pronunciation.
Please. But the link to Drag Night at the Nick on March 15th will be in the link in the description of this episode, wherever you're watching this video episode. Also, on Saturday, March 16th at 8 p.m. at Saturn Birmingham will be the Spring Fling Drag Extravaganza featuring Jada Essence Hall, which is an event presented by one of our sponsors, Central Alabama Pride. That's going to be hosted by me, featuring Remora Lee Creations, Queen Essence Hall, Victoria Taylor, Twat Weiland, Kavoris Dupree Star, Darrenisha Dene Star, and T-Shell Monroe. Such an amazing all-star lineup. I'm very, very excited for that show. So make sure you grab your tickets from the description of this episode as well to meet Jada and come party with us.
I'm so excited for that. I've already met her. Mark has tried to meet her and like something has always come up. So they're so excited to finally get to meet her because that's one of their all-time favorites.
This is going
to
be my first time meeting Jada.
She's great.
I got to work with Lady Bunny last spring when she was here, and it was really wild to see Benjamin Franklin like in the dressing room.
Oh my
like
God.
That. And then she put on a wig and went and performed for 20 minutes. So I'm interested to see Jada's form.
Jada's great because I got to work with her for brunch. She's fantastic. You do not want to miss that show. And on the second Wednesday of every month at 7:30 p.m., you can catch us for Drag Bingo at Highwire Brewing.
Highwire Brewing, how y'all doing?
The next one is going to be on Wednesday, April 10th.
Don't miss it, babes. After that, on April 12th and 13th at the Quest Club, you can catch the Central Alabama Pride pageants. And there are six categories. There are six categories. There's three on the 12th, three on the 13th. So even better than just going to watch, why not sign up to compete? You can register and learn more at centralalabamapride.org/pageants. And I do want to plug that I am a former title holder myself. I was the first ever mixed Central Alabama Pride. So, hey, maybe someone I know will go and compete, or maybe one of you will go and compete to join that fabulous lineup. What do you call that line of people? Like descendant line? Does it have a name? Like line, lineage? Is that the word? I think lineage is probably the closest word. So yes, maybe I'm excited to see who the third mix will be in my lineage. Me, Cam, Cam, and who?
And the Pride pageants this year will be hosted by Honey Davenport from RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh my, yeah, how did I miss that bit? It's going to have Honey Davenport, the queen of the bees.
Buzz, buzz,
bitch. Buzz, buzz.
And then we will be in Orlando for National Miss Comedy Queen from March 25th to 28th. If you would like to support our contestants who qualified for Miss Magic City Comedy Queen, you can find Rita Room as well as our first alternate Green's digital tipping information in the description of this episode.
Yes, going for a title, especially a national title, is not a cheap thing to do. So please, if you can support our fabulous contestants who we get the honor of promoting at National Miss Comedy Queen, that is Rita Room and Green. We're so excited to have them and see what they do.
They're going to slay.
Nationals. Oh, they really are. Like, when I was saying earlier that I've been loving being on this side of pageantry, yeah. Like, it's nice to not be the one competing and kind of be like, oh yeah, you should do that, girl. You know?
Yeah, you're trying to get me to do a pageant. You're like, it's fun not being the one competing, but you should compete.
Also, I love being the one competing. You know, I just love attention.
We know. And in today's episode,
Whip's Ponytail.
Our special guest is F.T. Lukens, who is a New York Times best-selling author who just happens to be non-binary. And we are talking with them about their new queer romantic fantasy young adult novel called Otherworldly on sale April 2nd.
So, yes, in our next two segments, you will get to see F.T. Lukens as we have a chat with them about this book. Fawn and I were really lucky. We got early access to Otherworldly. So we both read it. Here is the book. And isn't it beautiful? Oh, wow. Wow. Oh my gosh. Look at these two characters. Who could they be? They're in love. Oh, who are these three characters? Are they good? Are they evil? Who knows? You'll have to read the book to find out or listen to the next two segments of the episode.
But also read the book.
But also read the book. Yes, you should. It's a very good book. I truly, though, I enjoyed it a ton. Like, I had a hard time putting it down.
I will be reading more of FT's books after this.
This book has everything that you could want in a book. There's adventure, there's romance, there's comedy, and it's super, super queer.
Comedy. She's a comedy queen.
They're a comedy thing. Let's get into it. And we are back, and we are joined by F.T. Lukens. F.T. uses they, them pronouns, and they are a New York Times bestselling author of young adult speculative fiction, including novels like Spellbound, So This Is Ever After, and In Deeper Waters. Today, we're talking with them about their new book, Otherworldly, which is on sale April 2nd. Welcome to Flapping and Fawning, F.T.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, and thank you so much for being here. Can you just start by telling us a little bit about yourself and the kind of books you write for our listeners who may not have met you before?
Yeah, sure. I am F.T. Lukens, and I write young adult queer speculative books. And my newest book, Otherworldly, has a non-binary protagonist. It's, like you said, coming out in April, and I live in North Carolina in a very rural area, that's really it.
I love that. I love that you are from the South. I mean, I consider... Wait, North Carolina.
That's Am I getting that right?
That's okay. Definitely the South.
Sorry, I was never very good at geography.
Yes, that is.
But yes, I was so glad that to hear that you're from the South, because that is something that matters a lot to me. And like reading this book and placing myself in Ellery's shoes, I was like, wow, this really sounds like the hometown I grew up in. Yeah. And then going to the city later on. What can you tell us about Otherworldly without spoiling too much for our listeners?
Well, as you were saying, the main character, Ellery, has kind of grown up in a rural area, but there's been a 5-year winter, and so their family farm is pretty much decimated, and they have to leave and go to the city for the first time and work a job and live with their cousin and doing it at 17. And so they've had to grow up for a little bit quicker than their peers in this kind of magical setting. They're a skeptic. They don't believe in anything supernatural, but they run into this person who claims to be supernatural and claims to be from another world. So the other world specifically. And the other person is named Knox, and he is a familiar from the other world who has been on Earth with a contract for a sorceress and has kind of broken the rules and run away. So they have met, and the story is a romance, but also an adventure, and has a lot of themes around kind of growing up and finding your faith in other people and places. And yeah.
Let me tell you, your description of Knox sounds so incredibly hot.
Yes. With his emo bangs.
Yes. Uh-huh.
No, this is Knox is exactly who I would have had a crush on, like when I was Ellery's age, you know?
Absolutely.
And I don't know, I put myself in Ellery's shoes a lot. Like, I felt like I identified with them so, so much. And I think a lot of it, especially being someone from the South, like growing in this very faith-based home and then feeling like, I don't know that I can trust the things that my family is saying, but then having to like find your faith in your chosen family later on. Like, that was a huge theme for me in this book that I really identified with. I don't know, was there a particular character you identified with, Fawn?
Definitely Ellery, like as a non-binary person, also as somebody that, like, for me, I am one of those people that often will be like, my problems, push them aside because other people are having problems. So that was like something in the book when like that got addressed with Ellery, and Knox was like, no, you can still address your problems and acknowledge other people's problems at the same time. Like, you don't have to be like, oh, other people have it worse. You can acknowledge that, but also acknowledge your own problems at the same time. So that, like, was a really strong point for me.
Yeah, Ellery's a really complicated character. I was a little worried that folks are going to find Ellery a little caustic and off-putting, but there's a lot of reasons for that. Like I said, they've had to grow up really quickly, and they're under a lot of stress because of their family, and they're still trying to figure themselves out, and they have a lot, you know, it's pretty solid reasons for being kind of off-putting and protective of themselves. And yeah, but I really, when I was writing, you know, Knox was like the fun chapters, like, oh, this kind of innocent, yeah, figuring stuff out. And then Ellery were like the tough chapters that, you know, were coming from me.
So what all... this was my first time reading one of your books, and I don't know a whole lot about the writing process. So, like, what was it like building this world for Otherworldly?
So Otherworldly, the premise really started with, and each of my books is different, but for Otherworldly specifically, it started with, I wanted to write two opposing characters. I wanted to write the character that was the skeptic, and I wanted to write the character that was actual paranormal, and write a try my hand at writing a paranormal romance, but also keeping it, you know, YA and with the themes that you see in a lot of YA novels, like, you know, accepting of yourself and growth and those kinds of things. So I wanted to make sure that the romance was part of the story, but there were the overarching themes too. So I really started with the development of the two characters and then built around their relationships and how they met and then how they developed individually, but their romance developed as well. So that's where the starting point was for this particular novel. I actually started writing it as a high fantasy at first, but it didn't work. And I was like, oh, this is not working. And so it was reimagined into this urban fantasy.
Your world building was so good. Like, because it was one of those things, it's always great when you're reading and you can literally picture it. You can picture yourself in the character's shoes. And one of the like aspects, just early on, I noticed like little sprinklings of details. You'd like drop a little nugget, and I'd be like, I feel like that's going to come back later. And then it would. Or just like little stuff to like some people would be like not huge details, but just like the Knox eating a handful of goldfish crackers. Or the specific wording was the handful of fish crackers. And I'm like, goldfish, relatable. I love some goldfish. Just like the details, like anytime food was brought up, I noticed there was like a lot of good detail with the food. I don't know.
Well, I mean, like, if you want to write an immersive world, you have to think about the details that people are going to notice. And one of those for me is food, is to make sure to include, you know, some like little descriptions about, you know, food and clothing. You know, they talk about having to bundle up all the time and wear gloves, and just adding those like kind of small things kind of bring the reader in more than just having, you know, action the whole time.
One thing I wanted to ask, and this may be the most complicated question that you get in the entire time that you are promoting Otherworldly. And that is Lorelai a drag queen?
If you want her to be.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, there is a drag queen from Germany named Lorelai Rivers.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No.
Yeah, she was on Germany's Drag Race the first season, most like very recently.
That's amazing. Oh my God, I love that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I was like, okay, Lorelai is loud. She brings people that aren't supposed to be into the dressing room into the dressing room and just lets them stay there. That's very drag queen behavior. So I really love Lorelai. She was absolutely my favorite character of the whole book.
Yeah. Lorelai was a great character. Honestly, there's not a bad character. As far
there
as
is like, one, there is one bad character.
There's not one poorly written character.
Thank you.
Is what I mean. There's obviously like a bad character. I would argue there's more than one bad character.
Yeah, probably. I would, but definitely Hale has no redeeming qualities. Nobody should like Hale.
Oh yeah,
no.
Absolutely. No. No. And like, absolutely not.
And like I without spoiling anything, I thought we would get it at one point and then we just didn't. And I was like, "Come on, dude."
I kind of like that we didn't get a redemption from Hale personally.
Oh yeah.
Cuz like that's not real life. Like you don't always get a redemption from not every character has a redemption in real life, so I thought that like grounded it a bit.
One
thing that I really did
a little bit of a delay, so but go ahead. No, I had nothing to add about Hale. I don't like him. I didn't even like writing him.
One of the things that I did like was in the writing of Ellery, there was never any treatment of like whether Ellery was an AMAB non-binary or AFAB non-binary. There was never any misgendering of Ellery. So it very felt like face value, non-binary, no questions, which made it a lot more open to any non-binary person. Because like even in the descriptions of Ellery, there was no indication, which I really appreciate as a non-binary person. So that was just something that really stood out to me that I was like, this is great.
Oh, thank you. There was, in the first draft, there was one line, but I ended up taking it out that kind of hinted more directly, but I took it out. And because in my other work, Spellbound, which was the work before this one, the one of the other main characters is non-binary, and I got questions all the time, are they, you know, AMAB, AFAB, we like, what are, and I was like, whatever. And I wanted to keep that kind of feel because I wanted it to be open to all non-binary readers to be able to see themselves in the character.
I think that definitely worked because like that was one of the things that I was telling my partner about it as I was reading. I was like, there is no mention and I love it because that means anybody. And my partner's like, okay, when you're done, I need to read this book because they're also non-binary.
Yeah. And I love that as well because it felt like Ellery was, while they're not like safe in the book, they are safe from a lot of the microaggressions and things that non-binary people experience. And I love that because it allowed me to see like the world that we could have. And it just became a nice respite. Like if I was a high school student or anyone reading this book, like it's definitely the kind of book I wish I could have had growing up. Because something for me that I didn't expect was seeing a non-binary character written at all. Like I've never experienced that.
Yeah.
And so I frequently had to address like what that meant for me as I was reading it. I don't know. What has that experience been like for you writing about non-binary characters?
Well, first, that feels so special that Ellery got to be your first non-binary character. There are other books that have non-binary characters out there, like Mason Deaver's I Wish You All the Best. It's actually it has been turned into a film that is premiering soon. But I, you know, as somebody growing up, didn't see non-binary characters in fiction. It's only been the past few years that we're starting to see them come into like traditionally published novels. They've been in indie published novels, but you know, now it's becoming more mainstream. And my goal is to have readers, you know, at different ages, be able to read a book and see themselves in it. And maybe readers that don't have the language yet you know, non-binary or they, them pronouns or haven't experienced that yet or looking for it. Maybe Otherworldly is the first book they find it in. So, that's one of my goals is to make sure that my young queer readers get to see themselves represented.
It was nice because it was a story about a non-binary person and not a story about being non-binary. So it meant like, we just get to see a non-binary person existing with no question. And that's like, because even like as a queer person, for so long, any representation was about their queerness and not just like about them as a person. So it was really refreshing seeing just like representation is they are a person and there's no like questions that come with their queerness.
Right. And there's room on the shelves for all books. There's room on the shelves for the queer books about coming out. And there's room on the shelves for queer books about just queer teens having adventures. They're both very important styles of books. But I just wanted to, you know, in my personal writing, and I just want my queer characters just to have a fun time and have a fantasy adventure and a little bit of romance. Yeah, that's what I want to do.
What would you say has been your favorite thing about writing Otherworldly?
It being done.
Wow. I mean, it's definitely an undertaking, for sure.
It's in depth,
the world building, everything.
Honestly, Otherworldly was written and I had a very like chaotic time going on while it was written and while it was being edited. My mom passed away during it and then I have had some health issues and that kind of stuff. So actually it's kind of remarkable that I actually was able to write and edit a book last year.
That really is very remarkable. Do you feel that you ever put what you're feeling into your book? Like, does that drive you to write at all? Or is it a place for you to kind of escape?
It's both. Definitely in Spellbound and in Otherworldly, there's a lot of pieces of me that show up and a lot of things that I've experienced and a lot of themes that I feel that are personal to me. So it is a way to kind of address that stuff myself. But then there's other books that I've written that have really just been, you know, just a fun escape or just kind of like a tribute to things that I've loved.
I love that.
I'm going to ask a very lighthearted question. What astrological sign would you think Ellery would be?
I think Ellery's, well, I'm a Capricorn, so I'm going to say Capricorn for Ellery.
I knew it as a Capricorn myself. I knew it. Ellery gives very Capricorn energy.
In what way? So I'm a Scorpio, and everyone hates me whenever I say that. But what's Capricorn about Ellery?
They're just stubborn.
Stubborn, and everything is about, like, getting the job done and, like, mm-hmm. analytical before emotional. That's a very, like, Capricorn trait. And I was like, I clocked it.
Okay, so if Ellery's a Capricorn, what would you assign to Charlie?
Oh, I don't know. Y'all assign it.
I don't know nothing.
I don't know enough about the fun signs. Only know the...
Yeah, I honestly don't either. But Charlie was so fun to me because she reminded me a ton of my cousin. Because I feel like we all kind of have a Charlie in our life who is just that kind of chaotic energy who is also always going to be your biggest ally. She very much reminded me of my cousin Courtney, because like she was like one of the first people in my family who I came out to. And when I did that, rather than like comfort me in that moment and be like, don't worry, everything's gonna be okay, she was like, I will beat up anyone who comes after you. And she did.
Now she's in jail.
No. She's doing very well, actually. Love you, Courtney, if you're listening. Well, Fawn, why don't we take a break and we'll be back with more FT Lucas.
We are back with author F.T. Lukens, author of Otherworldly, available April 2nd. And I just want to know, Knox, as a character, clearly has an obsession with the werewolves, witches, and wyverns show. And in the prologue, I really got a kick out of the addressing of how unfair it is to watch a show week to week in an era of binge watching. I've literally been binge watching multiple shows. Like, I finished two animes this week alone. Short ones, but finished two alone this week.
They've also been watching Housewives.
That too. I've been binge watching a lot lately. But like, just like the addressing of like binge watching, I was like, this is relatable to today's audience in a way that if this was like 5 years ago, I don't think that it would hit the same. And it's just like the little things that I'm like, I would like screenshot, like I would take a picture with my phone of like two lines and send it to my partner. I'd be like, look at how fucking relatable this is.
Well, when in the prologue, and this is not a spoiler because it happens in like the first couple pages. In the prologue, when Knox comes out of the tree, he is wearing 90s clothes.
Yeah, yes.
And so the last time he was on Earth was the 1990s. And he can't, between each trip back and forth, his memory gets wiped. So he can only remember certain things. So he comes back out of the tree, he's wearing 90s clothes, and then he gets to go to this kind of modern apartment, and, you know, Arabelle, the witch, doesn't really need him for much. And so he just sits around and watches TV. And that's where he gleans all his information about the world.
I think the way that you made Knox liminal and like that, where he gets his memory wiped every time that he comes back, makes it such a, it helps diminish the power imbalance between Knox and Ellery when it comes to the romance, because that kind of like, you don't feel creepy about it. Because if he was like this eternal being that was all knowing, all everything, remembered every single past life, it would feel a little creepy and a little like power imbalance, but it kind of puts him on an even playing field, especially since he's watching these teenager shows. it like puts him on a little bit more playing field, even playing field with Ellery.
Thank you so much for picking up on that, because that is the absolute reason why I did that, because I didn't want there to be a power imbalance between this paranormal, supernatural individual being and a human that we kind of see sometimes in paranormal romances. And I just wanted to make sure that they were on an even footing and that there was no creep factor. And so that is why his memories get erased when he goes back and is a liminal being, and that's why, you know, they come across, he's more like naive and innocent because he has only watched teen TV, and that's where he's getting all his information. So they're on that same, like, when they meet it equal footing, and yes, that's exactly why I did that, so thank you.
I also just love how they met, like at work. You know, Ellery's washing the dishes in the diner.
Weird guy came in.
But also, like, it is so accurate to, like, the way you fall in love with someone in your job, like, as a young queer person. I remember I used to sell watches at a department store not growing up, but, you know, when I was in high school. And I was like, oh, my God, that's the one. You know, this hot, weird guy just came in and tried to tip me for a watch. And I was like, no, you don't have to worry about that, you know? so I absolutely love that aspect. How did you come up with the setting for the diner in Otherworldly?
Because I had two jobs when I was a teenager that were washing dishes. And actually, one of them, we had a Hobart machine, and we called it the steamiest guy on the at the camp that I worked at. And so, so Hobart was the steamiest guy there, because it's basically this, like, it's this big machine. You just shove the trays of, you know, dishes in, and you close it, and your hands get really hot, and the skin gets raw, and it's like, and you have to touch gross stuff. And that's, I did that. That was my job. So
I think I used one of those, but I didn't realize it was called a Hobart. I had like a recent job adventure thing that will have more details come out soon, where I was just at a campground, you know, and I was like washing dishes for all these people. And I didn't realize, but like in the thing, I was like, oh, that kind of sounds like the one at the campground I was working at.
Yeah, I didn't know it was called a Hobart, but I worked for a local baseball team when I was like in my earlier teens in the concession side of things. So occasionally would have to run that thing. And when there would be food that was wet after it, that you would get a piece of and visceral.
Yeah, so that is like a real like detail from my life. And I actually looked up Hope, because I remember we called it Hobart, and I actually looked it up, and it is a brand name for those machines.
Oh, I love that. I was like, I really thought that Ellery had just named it Hobart, you know, or like that was like the community diner name. I also wanted to talk a little bit about the party that they go to, because I feel like the second that happens, there is a huge shift, you know, in like, oh, things are happening, you know. And I really appreciated Zeta's spiel about like, this is how you are safe at a party. You know, I was an orientation leader when I was at college back in the day, and I gave the exact same spiel to many and many a freshman, you know. But it's like, oh God, I'm getting this warning sign, and shit's about to go down. So what was it like building that part of the story out? Do you hate writing conflict? Because I feel like I would if I was an author.
That was one of the earliest scenes that I knew was going to happen. So I was excited when I finally got to see that scene and to write it, but it was, you know, it didn't feel great, kind of an icky scene. I made sure that, you know, Zeta and Charlie had that spiel in the beginning of, you know, don't accept an open drink for anyone. Don't accept candy from anyone. We're going to meet back up here in an hour. Keep your phone on. I mean, like, all of those things were things that, you know, my friends and I would do before we went somewhere. So I wanted to make sure that aspect was in there for any for the readers, for the teen readers especially. And then, yeah, I knew that scene was going to be a big turning point in the story, and I was had been building towards that scene. So when I finally got to write it, it was really fun. I was like, oh, I'm finally at this point, you know, in the book, in the narrative. But the scene itself was really difficult, because it was, like I said, it was it's kind of
yeah. I mean, there were two moments in the book when I binge read like the whole second half last Saturday, and there were two points when I was like really interactive with the book, and one was I was just like, no, Ellery, stop, do not do it, you know, for the party. But then also at the, without getting too into it, but the mall, you know, I broke down a little bit. Called my husband, was like, hey, I can't make it to that party tonight. I need to sit home and finish reading this book.
I've been like reading a lot of it on my like breaks at work. So like I would be on a break at work, limited time, trying to binge as much as I could. And when I got to the mall scene, I was like, what the fuck?
I know it's a young adult book. Oh, we're allowed to cuss, right? It's a young adult book. I mean, it's our podcast. Okay. I forgot the rules. It's been a minute.
The mall scene was another scene that I knew was happening from the very beginning. Again, it was, you know, something that the narrative is building towards, and I knew it was going to happen. And I just wanted to kind of keep, and not to spoil anything, but to keep the reader guessing about who was going to be affected, kind of thing. The mall itself, the kind of abandoned mall, and I've did this throughout the book. Like, if you notice, like, some of the big scenes happen in kind of liminal spaces in creepy places. So, like, the darkened alley, the abandoned mall, the cornfield, all of those things are kind of horror tropes. So a lot of the big scenes happen in spaces that are supposed to feel eerie.
I think that definitely worked. That was something that definitely read. Because the mall scene, I was like, especially with the state of like malls in general today, there are so many that are like being abandoned. We had one that's like been permanently closed here in town. And I remember like for us, it was like the main floor, but then the bottom floor was what got closed first. Mm. And so like it was very relatable and tangible. Like you knew exactly what to expect out of this. But it was just like wonderful writing, very visually, like you could see it. But I know we talked about Hale, which is one of the bad characters, but we haven't talked about the Shades, or as I like to call them, the Shadies.
Okay.
What was it like writing the Shades? What was like some of your inspiration?
The Shades are kind of a combination of the three witches from Macbeth and, you know, just like the Fates from Hercules. the Nazgul from Lord of the Rings, kind of that kind of archetype of a character that, you know, is creepy, you don't really know their motivation, and they pop up at the worst times.
Yeah, truly.
They were, anytime they popped up, I was like, the fuck, can they just go somewhere else? Not them again.
My first thought was, get the cast iron stove. You know? Just hit them. When I know it mentions at one point that the Shades, and if this is too much of a spoiler, tell me and I can cut it out. But I know it mentions that their weakness is iron, right? So what's the is there a particular inspiration behind that? Is that like the charms throughout the book?
So the iron, it goes really back to mythology, and it's, you know, like fairies are susceptible to iron. Yeah, so that's just kind of a common trope in mythology. The charms and the good luck charms, the acorn that Ellery carries that is wrapped in iron is kind of a combination of a couple different myths. But there is a myth of, you know, like fairies or pixies, like luring travelers off of paths. If you give them an acorn, they'll leave you alone. And, you know, having it wrapped in the iron wire, you know, is another kind of like iron kind of thing against the supernatural, like a horseshoe. You know, that's why you have horseshoes over the doors,
right?
Yeah,
is to keep the evil spirits out. So yeah, it's just a real blend of different kind of mythologies and those kinds of things. I talked to somebody else about just how in my family, whenever we would travel, my mom would give us a Saint Christopher's medal, because that was her belief of, you know, that Saint Christopher was the patron saint of travelers. And so she would give us her medal to wear when we would travel, me and my siblings. So that was just one of the things that she did. And that kind of is the same thing. Ellery's mom gave them the acorn when they left.
I absolutely love that, because I'm someone who is, I'm very sentimental with certain items, you know. Do you have any like good luck charms that you hold on to, Fawn?
My family was not very superstitious. They were very Jesus.
They were a
Jesus,
little stitious.
Jesus. So like we didn't have any of that kind of stuff. I wish, because like I would totally be into that shit.
Well, I have a ring from my grandfather, you know, that he would wear when before he passed away. And yeah, so my grandfather had this ring and I would like carry it around with me anytime I have an interview or something. And it's always served me really well. So that's what I was thinking about as I was reading about those different elements of the book. But Fawn, did you have any other questions you wanted to ask before we got into our next segment?
I think we covered all of mine.
FT, is there anything we would be remiss if we didn't mention about Otherworldly?
No, I'm actually like really thankful for the questions y'all did ask. You picked up some things that other people haven't gotten yet, so thank you.
Well, it was such an amazing book, and I really, yeah, really, really enjoyed it. If you could just tell us one more time, where and when can our listeners go buy Otherworldly?
So Otherworldly will be out Tuesday, April 2nd. If the listeners would like a signed copy, they can pre-order them from Malaprop's bookstore in Asheville. There's a link in my Instagram bio where they can get a pre-order signed copy, and I'll go to the store and personalize it and sign it. But otherwise, it'll be out everywhere on April 2nd.
Perfect. And I love that you said that. I'm going to put that in the link of the description of this episode.
Not that you can hardly see it, but
we also got early access to this book, and we have a beautiful copy right here. I mean, look at this gorgeous cover art.
It is so gorgeous. I love the cover art for this book and the back.
Oh my God. I didn't realize there was a back.
And the back is gorgeous.
Oh my God. Is that Charlie with the red? Oh my God.
Yeah.
I live. I had a digital copy, which was also good, but there's something special about being able to see the cover art right in front of you.
I was able to get in the bathtub, have a drink, and read like very luxuriously. I just moved, so we have a clawfoot tub. So I got to like luxuriate while I read the book. It was wonderful.
I love that. All right. Well, one more thing. FT, where can our listeners find you on social media?
I am on Instagram really only, and I post a little bit, but yeah, they can find me on Instagram, or they can email me if they have questions, or my website is ft-lukens.com.
ft-lukens.com. Sounds amazing. All right. Well, FT, you have been warned, because now it's time for our very favorite segment each week here at Flapping and Fawning. And that is, that means it's time for our flop of the week. This is our chance to go on a 60-second uninterrupted rant about something in this world that deserves to be flopped. And I like to say, the pettier, the bettier. Fawn, do you know what you want to flop this week?
Look, I've got a list from where we've been on a break. I've been building up and keeping tally. And I have one that's very pertinent to something I'm dealing with right now.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, Fawn, I'm going to have you go first then, okay? Your 60-second timer starts in 3, 2, 1.
My flop of the week are car insurance companies.
Ooh.
I feel so scammed because I got in an accident that was not my fault. Someone rear-ended me. And because they didn't have proof of insurance and they're giving me the runaround, I'm having to pay a $500 deductible on my car to get my car repaired. And I may or may not get that money back. I shouldn't be having to pay for this deductible when it wasn't on the police report that it is not my fault. And I'm having to like fork over $500. Bitch, I'm poor. Do you think I can afford $500?
You Ms. better tip
Alpha
them.
Insurance, you better like get yourself together and you better give me my money back from this because I'm of course going to pay the deductible. But bitch, I shouldn't have to if it was not my fault. I'm pressed.
And that's why car insurance companies are Fawn's flop of the week. Yeah, I hate that for
I'm
you.
Pressed.
That's been quite an ordeal. Have you ever had to deal with something like that, FT?
I've been rear-ended twice in my life, but the one time there was damage to the car, we didn't really have any problems with the other insurance company. But I understand, though. I have a friend who just got in an accident and their car got quote-unquote totaled and it was paid off, and now the money they're getting back from the insurance company isn't enough to buy a new car.
Wow. Ugh, that's rough. Well, I know it's like car insurance combined with like rental car companies, which
because
is
because the person who hit me had a rental car and they like claim to have rental insurance, but like they were asking for me to send pictures to them. And I was like, can you just give me the information for like who I need to contact to get this over with? And like, they would not give me the information at all.
You know who you need to call?
Flap Alexander Jack Nara.
Well, no, someone with an actual law degree would probably be better than me. All right. I believe that means it's time for my flop of the week.
Yes.
Okay, here we go.
Are you ready?
I believe I am. This is one I've been sitting on ever since I was on Camp Wanakiki.
Oh.
So I just kind of remembered
this
it the other day.
This is an old one.
Yeah, so we'll see.
Are you ready?
I'm ready, Betty.
3, 2, 1, go.
My flop of the week is people whose excuse for everything is, sorry, I don't have cable. What do you mean you don't have cable? Obviously you don't. It's the mid-20s at this point. We're all having streaming services, but we all have Google. Not having cable is not an excuse for being culturally unaware, okay? And also, for the show that I was on, it wasn't even on cable. So for you to say, sorry, I don't have cable, that's not a valid excuse. Pay the $4, $5 in Canada, like everyone else, and just watch Camp Wanakiki on Out TV. It's not that hard.
20 seconds.
Also, social media does not require cable. Podcasting does not require cable. Would you believe I once had someone tell me that they couldn't write us a 5-star review because they don't have cable? Lies! Oh my god, and people say that vegans want you to know that they're vegan. No, people who don't have cable want you to know that they don't have cable. So that's why people who don't have cable and use it as an excuse is my flop of the week.
What about jumper cables?
No, I obviously it's not even against people with jumper cables. FT, do you have cable?
Of course.
Thank you. I said, of course.
Someone's going to attack through the screen.
Look, I don't have cable. The only cable I got are jumper cables, and it's not even real jumper cables. It just hooks up to a box that'll jump my car off.
But do you have you ever had people tell you that as for like an excuse for not knowing something?
No, I just assume everybody streams.
I've heard people say things like, oh, well, I don't go on social media, or I don't have Twitter, or I don't have Facebook or, you know, like whatever it is. I've heard that before.
It's cable is just, it's so specific. It's the one that always gets me. I'm like, what is this, the 90s? Like, what do you mean? You don't have, okay. there's more than one way to know things.
If you can bootleg it, probably. If it's out there, you can probably find a bootleg.
All right, FT, that means it's time for your flop of the week. Are you ready?
I guess.
You got this. Okay, okay, I'm gonna start your 60-second timer in 3, 2, 1.
Okay, so folks that know me from Instagram and know I am an avid crocheter. I crochet all the time, and I make different things. Well, my favorite yarn by a certain craft company got discontinued, and they didn't tell anybody they were doing it. We, you know, the crafting community just kind of found out, and so we had to go to all the specific stores and buy up all of the merchandise that we could find for this specific yarn. And and then they came back and said, after like this big like internet like, oh no, our yarn's being discontinued, they came back and said, oh no, it'll be back in the spring. And so everyone had bought up all the yarn and now you can't get it anywhere, and they're saying it's being back in the spring, but then yesterday everyone found out they're filing bankruptcy.
And that's why FT's favorite crochet company lying about the yarn that they're going to be out of but then filing bankruptcy is their flop of the week.
I know, that's very specific, but it made me so mad.
That would make me mad.
I wonder if the crocheter that I follow on YouTube is experiencing that. I wonder if she's acknowledged that. Well, there's somebody I follow on YouTube that crochets Pokemon. That's my special interest. And like,
that's my special interest. Like, okay, you better work.
But yeah, I can imagine. Like, I know I've got favorites in like all of my hobbies of brands, so I can imagine. And because not all yarn is created equal.
Truly, no. I mean, that's like, go ahead.
Oh, well, it's not. And this was actually a brand new yarn that had come out just a couple months ago. And everyone bought it up, and it was so hard to find in stores. And it was super, super popular. And I used it for a couple of different projects, and I really liked it. And I got the different colors. And then all of a sudden, they're discontinuing it. And then they're not discontinuing it. And now they're filing bankruptcy. So who knows if it's going to come back out.
Aww.
It was brand new popular, and then they filed for bankruptcy.
Wild. Sounds like quite a pyramid scheme or a money laundering scheme gone wrong.
Somebody doesn't know how to manage money at that company.
That's like my favorite pair of eyelashes that I use for my bottom lashes. They discontinued those, and so I finally found some. So my husband, he does nails, if you can't tell. And there's like this certain nail store that we go to in Atlanta, and they're the only place that I can find these spiky nails anymore, or spiky lashes anymore, that go on my bottom lashes. So I feel your pain, kind of.
I just throw on whatever lash I can find.
Do you have any of your crochet stuff? Like, can we see your crochet? Is that available?
I can run to the other room. Would that be okay?
Yeah,
go get
fine.
It. Okay, let me.
We can do whatever we want.
All right, I will be right back. Enjoy this poster of Knox and Ellery.
Wow. Ooh, look at Knox.
Aren't they a hot couple?
Yes. They make my bugs bite. Yo, I actually genuinely enjoyed Otherworldly so much, though.
It was so good.
And I don't think I've read, like, a fantasy novel genuinely since I was in high school and had to take, like, AR tests, you know?
What's an AR test?
It was one where you had to, like, read the book, and you had to get a certain amount of points every year. And so you would, like, read a book and take a test on it, and each book was worth a certain amount of points.
So I went to private school. We didn't have that shit.
Oh, that's right. You rich.
All right, I made it back.
I actually made a full screen. Okay.
So there's a little flamingo.
I live.
I love that.
That is so cute.
How do I make it?
and then this Little Mermaid.
Wow.
So yeah.
Those are so cute.
Oh my god, I love the hair.
Yeah, that took forever.
I'm sure. So we have a friend who, he was on the show I was on, Camp Wanakiki, and he had a, it was a crocheted volcano look, but that was crocheted, yeah. Right? Not knitted? That's a different.
I think it was crocheted.
Okay. And it, like, the way that they made his, like, the volcano, it was like a volcano themed look, and he had like a smoke wig made of crochet. It was so cool. It's like, how do you structure that? I mean, I can sew, but not that.
I don't know if this is like going to be clear or not.
It Riley kind Poppy's of is.
A phenomenal king. All right, now that brings us to our Fawn of the Week, which is our final segment of each episode of Flapping and Fawning, where we decided to not close out with 60 seconds of complaining. We're going to, like, shout out something that we like in this world. Maybe it's a local entertainer that we love, or someone in the media that we love, or just something really good that happened to us. So who wants to start with their Fawn of the Week?
I don't mind starting. I know this has a high chance of being yours.
We'll see.
But my Fawn of the Week is going to getting to open with Flap for Chapel Roan.
Oh, yes.
At the time of recording, it was like this past Sunday. And honestly, like, the highlight of my drag career so far. It was such an incredible experience getting to meet her, somebody that's like listened to her for like a while, also got a lot of sentimental value with like my relationship with her songs, because like my partner introduced me to her like on our second date. So that was like huge highlight.
FT, are you familiar with Chapel Roan's music at all?
Mm-mm.
She's definitely one you should check out. A fabulous queer artist who's out there doing amazing things, very similar to you. I think her song Pink Pony Club is like one of her most popular songs.
Yeah.
We got to open for her this past Sunday, and that was truly an amazing experience. I have two Fawns of the Week. And
I do.
And it's not going to be Chapel Roan. The first one is, someone told me that today, the day of recording, March 7th, is National Flapjack Day. And I didn't even know that I had a national holiday.
Are you sure it's not National Pancake Day?
No. No. You know I don't talk about pancake, okay?
Is it National,
National Flapjack Day? No. Not even going to dignify that. And then my other Fawn of the Week, it goes to you, FT, because truly getting to read this book was, it was very, like, honestly life-changing to me, because I had never seen myself in a book in the way that I did with Otherworldly. So thank you so much for what you do, and thank you for letting us be a part of this promotion of the book and getting early access, because it was a really special thing to get to do for our 99th episode of Flapping and Fawning.
I will be going and reading your other books after this.
Oh, well, thank you so much. That's such high praise that, gonna make me cry. I'm really glad that y'all enjoyed it, and that it resonated with you.
Thank you so much. What's your Fawn of the Week, FT? Take us out.
I have two. One, I just want to kind of shout out our local animal shelter in the county that I live in. My daughter and I volunteer there, and we foster kittens a lot, and she particularly volunteers in the cat room and stuff like that. And there's just been so many strays recently, and there have been they've been kind of overrun, but they've done just such a great job with organizing and getting all these animals adopted. So I'm, you know, just want to shout out them. But also I wanted to kind of, as I alluded to, you know, when we were talking about just the completion of Otherworldly, just had a really rough year, and I wanted to fawn over my friends that have helped me kind of through that. And they are what I call my pocket friends. They are my internet friends that I have had for about a decade now that we have met through different fan communities. And they have really, you know, been the people that I can pick my phone up and text to and talk with. And them.
I love it. It's like your very own good luck acorn in your phone.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. And on that note, thanks everyone for listening to our first episode of season 3 on Flapping and Fawning. Write a 5-star review of Flapping and Fawning on Facebook or Apple Podcasts, and we will read it in an episode.
Our jingle is by Lily St. Queer, and our cover art was made by THS Productions.
Special thanks to Robbie Wise and Danny Lee for branding materials.
Connect with us at Flapping and Fawning Pod on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, or by email at flappingandfawningpod@gmail.com.